your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. It is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. That's right. They can see you quickly. Did you know that? If you've got an injury, they treat things at their walk-in clinic, like bone fractures, dislocations, joint injuries, sprains, strains. Weekend athlete, hardcore athlete, not an athlete at all, but you got those injuries piling up. Walk in between 8 and 7, Monday through Friday. That's right, between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday through Friday at I-435 and all at the University of Kansas Health System. Right there at the Indian Creek campus, you can walk right in. They're diagonal to a Top Golf. Go see him serving the folks, the same folks that treat the Royals and Chiefs. As Cougar just said, they can treat you. Fractures, dislocations, joint injuries, sprains, strains. The University of Kansas Health System has you covered. Let's start things off on the drill in Toronto. Why wouldn't he? Mike Wilner, the Toronto star, is up first here. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm all right. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been a little bit while. We've got a little something going on. We know what the news is around here and what we see nationally, the reaction to 10 Royals not being able to make the trip to Toronto. What's the reaction there in Toronto?
I mean, from my end, I think it's ridiculous. But and I think that's sort of the feeling that a lot of people up here feel. Like you know, we're a country that's 90%+ vaccinated here. It hasn't been nearly as politicized up here as it has been down there. And there's just no reason not to do it. So, and especially when you're talking about professional sports and so much of it is team first, to have so many people on a team just not thinking about that team for whatever dubious, ridiculous reasons that they might have for doing it, it's a little nuts.
We've heard, or were hearing at one point, that Andrew Benintendi was a guy that the Blue Jays might want to acquire. Is that off the table now, or is there a belief? I saw a report about, I think from Boston or New York, that there's a feeling that if they traded for him, that he may indeed get vaccinated to facilitate a trade and have a chance to win. Is there a view of Benintendi as a trade target?
I mean, I think he would have to get vaccinated first. You're certainly not going to make that kind of trade based on a feeling that you hope he will if he gets put in a winning situation. But, you know, again, how stupid is that to suggest that you're making this decision based on your health and based on how dubious you feel about this vaccine, but if you're on a winning team, you'll take it? Like, it flies in the face of any sort of
logic, reason,
about anything, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I would think, I would think he's off the table for the Jays. I would think he's also off the table for the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Astros and any American League contender who might have to come through Toronto in a playoff series, unless it's known that he is vaccinated prior to any trade getting consummated.
Tell me a little Blue Jays talk. I think 4 games over .500 when the Blue Jays decided to fire their manager. Did that come as a shock, and was it the right move?
It definitely came as a surprise to me. I mean, I was under the impression that Charlie Montoya was here to sort of implement the plan of the front office and maintain a positive atmosphere, and I thought he'd been doing that, but they felt like it wasn't working, and you know, there were some really strange things said by the general manager in the news conference announcing the firing, where the GM Ross Atkins said, "I'm the most accountable out of everyone," and I mean, clearly he still has a job and the manager doesn't, so I think Charlie was the most accountable. But he also said, "We tried to make it work with Charlie," which is an indication to me that there were issues and it wasn't working and it had been going on a little bit longer than this. And so I'm wondering, A, why you went into the season without making a change when there were issues, and two, why you gave Charlie Montoyo an extension before the season if there were issues that you were trying to make it work with. So it seems a little odd, but, you know, when they let John Gibbons' contract expire after 2018, the thought was that John Schneider, who is now the interim manager, was the manager in waiting the whole time. So I think they've got the guy they want in that seat now, and I think they'll be all right.
Certainly think they're going to be buying and not selling, right? At the deadline, what will the targets be?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The targets will be a couple arms in the bullpen. They need some people with some swing and miss back there. And starting pitching, they could use one starting pitcher. Right now, they're sort of running a four-man rotation with Yusei Kikuchi hurt, but Kikuchi was terrible when he was healthy. So you need to improve on that spot. I think it's all going to be about arms and not necessarily. I mean, you'd love to find a really good left-handed bat, but Alejandro Kirk's got to play, and he's only going to catch two or three times a week. So you can't really take away that DH spot. So I think it's going to be, you know, 90% of the focus is going to be on arms.
All right. Great stuff as always. Mike Wilner, we'll try to make sure it's not so long this next time. Thanks for the time, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too. I love coming and hanging out with you in KC.
Travis Hancock, we hope, enjoys hanging out in KC as well. WFNZ in Charlotte, North Carolina. Travis, how are you, sir?
Hey, man. Good to talk to you. How are you, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always our pleasure. North Carolina has been discussed as a possibility for either the Big Ten or SEC. How much is that a conversation piece there in Charlotte?
No, it's one of the biggest conversation pieces we have going right now. Not just North Carolina, but, you know, we have when you count Coastal Carolina, which is on the beach side, obviously, about 5 hours from us. So if you count all the teams in North and South Carolina, we have 10 Division I teams. So when realignment happens, it's not just North Carolina and Duke and NC State and Wake Forest. It's Clemson. It's South Carolina. It's App State, ECU, Coastal Carolina. We have 10 teams. So when realignment happens, it's a massive deal. But when it's North Carolina Tar Heels being linked to the SEC and the Big Ten and the mega conferences, it's a massive deal. It's a daily conversation. It's the great unknown. In any scenario that's thrown out there, it's hard just to dismiss anything because nothing is off the table anymore. Anything that sounds crazy, including the ACC Pac-12 partnership, it all seems to sort of have a little bit of legitimacy behind it. So everything right now is on the table in college sports.
Yeah, it's amazing. Is it all sitting? What's your view of the ACC's future? Is it that we buy the SEC that they're done at 16, at least for now? Or is it it's all about Notre Dame? If Notre Dame says we're in as a full member for the ACC, the ACC as we know it, plus Notre Dame, really has a life? Or is it if Notre Dame goes to the Big Ten, then the ACC is going to be pillaged?
First of all, I don't believe the SEC. I think they're done, like, for today, for, like, the week. But, you know, if the Big Ten goes and adds Notre Dame, are they then going to go to the – I mean, I don't know if they're ever really done. It doesn't seem like the SEC can help themselves. It feels like, yeah, they might say they're done for now. But, you know, you're right. Notre Dame holds the cards, really, for the future of college sports and what they do, especially the ACC. We had Paul Feinbaum on this week of the SEC Network and ESPN, who's very well connected. And his take is, if Notre Dame doesn't join the ACC for football to join the other sports it's in for, the ACC will cease to exist. It'll die. And I don't know if he means it'll die from the sense of it'll be just completely gone or as we know it, it'll die, because that means the five teams that are rumored to be on the way out possibly are Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State, Miami, and Virginia is coveted too, especially by the Big Ten apparently. So if Notre Dame doesn't enter the ACC full-time, yeah, it's going to be hard to survive, and you have to just go into survival mode and try to find, you know, Houston's and TCU's and Cincinnati's and partner with the Pac-12. And that's not ideal, especially with our area where it's so tradition-rich and history-rich, especially on the basketball side. That's really going to run some fans off here.
I'd even throw in Georgia Tech for the Big Ten to get into the Atlanta market and everything. That's probably one that they'd be eyeing as well. Tell me, G.G. Jackson decommits from Carolina. What's this say for Hubert Davis and where the program is right now?
Well, I don't think it's a huge deal for North Carolina because they're still going to be the favorites for this coming college basketball season. G.G. Jackson was one of the top players for the next year, and there's still plenty of time to put a good class together. I don't know if you followed what happened today, and it's confusing because I'm trying to, when I was on hold, I'm trying to figure it out. So G.G. Jackson's a Columbia, South Carolina kid where the Gamecocks reside. And when Frank Martin was the head coach before he left, he was thought to be their guy. Then Frank Martin got fired, went to UMass. G.G. Jackson then goes to North Carolina for next year. Now the rumor was he's reclassifying to stay in Columbia to be a Gamecock for this coming season. But now there's a report today, or Sporting News put out a thing today, that G.G. Jackson's going to go the NBA route. So I don't know if there's been something I missed along the way. I don't know, but it doesn't look like it'll be North Carolina, and now I'm not sure it'll be South Carolina. It looks like he possibly, I guess, is going the G League route. He retweeted the piece that he's going to the NBA, and then he unretweeted it. So I don't know what's going on. It's been a confusing journey. He's got the family heavily involved, which is always interesting when there's a lot of voices for the player's head. So very confusing on exactly what's going on. But he definitely won't be at North Carolina, and it doesn't appear that he might be at South Carolina either.
How much optimism that Baker Mayfield is the answer at quarterback for the Panthers and will save Matt Rhule's job?
It remains to be seen about Matt Rhule's job. Certainly in the NFC with a weaker conference than the AFC, they have some hope. Baker Mayfield has sort of re-energized the fan base because not only is Sam Darnold bad at football, there's not a lot of personality there that enthuses a fan base. There's not energy. Whether you love Baker, you hate Baker, you think he's good or not, he creates discussion. There's an energy. There's a bounce that Sam doesn't have. So I think it just changes a little bit of the culture already. Now, we'll see if that translates to a better football, but certainly based off what we've seen the last couple of years, it's hard to be worse at quarterback than the Panthers have been. So we're looking forward just to see what Baker can do, and it's just a different, fresh arm, and it's just kind of exciting when you get a new guy in here just to see what he can do. And if they didn't give up a lot, so if he fails, well, we're used to that around here.
Travis Hancock in Charlotte, great stuff. Appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
And you too, anytime. Appreciate it.
In San Francisco.
It's where we find Roxy Bernstein. 95.7 The Fan, ESPN, A's Radio, Westwood One, owns his own sandwich shop, does it all. Roxy, how are you, my friend?
What do you want for lunch, Serena? Making sandwiches. What do you need?
You know, give me the hero, right? With a little extra mayo. You know me. I'm a fat ass at heart, you know. Even though, of course, I'm in peak physical condition. But at heart, I like to let myself run wild. Tell me. First of all, about the fact that Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback. What do we think we're getting from Trey Lance at quarterback if we're a fantasy player?
Do we dare call it training camp coming up for the 49ers, Saran? Sorry, that was just too easy. Oh, boy. That's a very good question because if you look at the history of Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers, and it was always the run to set up the pass. And, of course, Debo turned into this weapon last year where he wasn't just a receiver. So I think they're going to be creative again about the way they use it. I don't anticipate them opening up the playbook all that much, especially early in the year, until it proves that he can run this offense and is the threat in the air. But here's the other thing that people know that defensively. And they're going to try to keep him in the pocket. They're trying to not let him be creative. But I do believe that the 49ers will be a little bit more conservative early in the season to figure out what they have. And if he shows that he's got that ability to stretch the field, then I would anticipate them getting more confidence in moving the ball downfield with Lance.
Baseball-wise, what do the Giants do right now? 13.5 out after giving a scare to the Dodgers. Also on the outside looking in for the wild card. Are they buyers as we head towards the trade deadline?
I think at this point you have to still say they're buyers because they're right in the thick of things as far as the wild card race goes. They're not going to win the division. I think that's a foregone conclusion. But at this point, sir, and you can't necessarily mortgage your future to think, oh, we could sneak in with a wild card. I know that's how they won World Series previously as wild cards, But keep in mind, three wild card teams are getting in this year. But they're going to be in the thick of it. The problem for the Giants this year is some of the players they were counting on had disappointing seasons. For example, Brandon Crawford is one that he had an MVP-type season last year, but he has been not even close to this player he was a year ago. And a lot of the buttons that Gabe Kapler pressed last year that worked, and the majority of the buttons he pressed did work last year, it hasn't been the same this year for San Francisco. The pitching has been inconsistent, so has the bullpen, and the offense has been. And again, as you and I have talked about before, I don't think they anticipated the significance of just how much they would be losing with Buster Posey retiring. Is this a team that can get hot and win it? I just don't see it with the Giants. I think they should be smart about the way they proceed. But I wouldn't say that Farhan Zaidi should put all his chips into the in the middle of the table. But at the same time, if you have a chance to get in, you got to go for it a little bit.
Do the A's have anything to trade?
Well, Frankie Montas will be gone. They got a scare with him and right shoulder inflammation. He's thrown a couple bullpen sessions. He's probably penciled in to start the first game after the break. Did not go on the IL, but it was concerning, especially when he's your most valuable commodity that you have on the market. They are going to move him. It's a question of, I think, do they get the return they're hoping for? At this point, they clearly have not gotten the offer that they wanted because he's still here. I would anticipate him going. I would think Ramon Laureano is a possibility to go as well. And a lesser scale, Sean Murphy, because he has a very team-friendly contract. So I would say Montas definitely, Laureano probably, and after that, who knows?
Stanford and Cal, are they going to be Big Ten teams?
No. At least, I don't think, Seren, that anything is going to happen until Notre Dame figures out their future. And everybody I talk to says Notre Dame is going to stand pat because of their lucrative NBC deal. Why should they be in a hurry to go join the Big Ten of the SEC? So I think the Pac-10 teams remaining, excluding SC and UCLA, are things not... I don't think a foregone conclusion that UCLA is gone, because now you're seeing the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, chiming in. He's not happy about this. He could throw a wrench into it. I don't anticipate that being a holdup, but it could happen for UCLA. But I do anticipate the 10 teams staying together in some form of the Pac-10. Do they add? I think everything's on the table as far as the conference goes.
So you don't put any credence into the dreams, aspirations, and some people will say anticipation that the Big 12 will add four schools from the Pac-12.
No, I don't see that. I'm not going to say it's silly, but why would those schools want to join the Big 12? I get it, because Kansas is an attractive partner, and Baylor is certainly the success that they've had. But Colorado's already done that. Does Colorado want to go to Lubbock and Ames and Morgantown and the Little Apple? I don't think so. And when you have major media markets like Seattle, the Bay Area, Portland, Phoenix, Salt Lake City still in the landscape, I think these 10 teams are solidly together for now, unless the Big Ten comes calling.
Yeah, I think if they lose Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Washington, they're not hanging around. Then they're yeah. 4 of 6. At that point, it becomes, I would think, Oregon State and Washington State are the ones, am I wrong, that are, no one seems to ever mention them. They're the ones that are stuck.
Right. Yeah, and I think everything's going to hinge upon, Seren. We're going to know more in a couple weeks when Pac-12 Media Day is July 29th down in L.A. And George Kliavkov, the Pac-12 commissioner, is in this 30-day window to garner the new media rights, and the permission's been granted. I think we'll know a lot more come Friday, July 29th, to see what happens as far as the future goes. And all signs point to a deal with ESPN that not only will be the primary carrier for Pac-10 games, because I'm going to call it the 10 because of 10 teams, but also I think that some form of the Pac-12 network will be with ESPN as well.
Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff as always, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
You got it, pal. Talk to you soon.
He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
Eric Eager, best in the business when it comes to the sports analytics. You want to go for the best setup for watching a game? Head over to Twin Peaks. You know, it's happy hour right now. Why wouldn't you go for a 29-degree man-sized draft beer with happy hour right there at the Twin Peaks? Remember, it's always the headquarters for all your fights, whether it's UFC or MMA. They have you covered. It's all right there at Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Check it out. Happy hour is the time to be there, whatever your preference. Everything from tequila cocktails, extensive bourbon category, top shelf spirits, local craft beers, handcrafted whiskey cocktails. Great drink menu, second to none. Don't forget about, like I said, 29-degree man-sized draft beers, plus TVs everywhere. You want to watch those Royals that want to play tonight? It was a very entertaining game. Feedback I saw online was everybody was enjoying watching the young guys play for the Royals. You can watch it right there at Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. See them in Olathe and Independence. Let's talk to the data scientist, the VP of R&D from Pro Football Focus, PFF.com. Eric Eager is with us to talk about the news of the day. No Orlando Brown extension. Eric, how are you?
Look, I'm eligible to get into Toronto, which is good.
Strong.
I also am happy because the listeners that got to listen to your fine show on Monday knew what was going to happen today before it happened. So I'm happy.
Yes, you have been detailing long before even the news was leaking out from his agent that he was saying, oh, it's not looking so good. For the last several weeks, you've been telling us you don't see this coming together, and it didn't. And at the end of the day, this is a good decision by the Kansas City Chiefs, is it not?
Yeah, ultimately, I think they offered him probably an okay offer, right? Like, $18 million per year is kind of what we said on the show, the Red, Gold, and Bold, the 2D podcast. That was basically what they offered him for the first 5 years. They gave him a huge offer from a guaranteed standpoint, more guaranteed money in the offer than Trent Williams got. So, I think that they value Orlando Brown. I don't think that that's a question. I just think that they value Orlando Brown properly, maybe a little bit more than I would, but properly. And for him to sort of not necessarily see that for him, they even gave him that extra year that obviously was not going to do anything, but it did raise, the sticker price of the deal above and beyond, Trent Williams' deal. I think there's a level of delusion there that, is probably to be expected from a guy who just got an agent 6 weeks ago.
Well, and you don't end up with an agent who's never done NFL contracts unless he's selling you something like, oh, no, forget about these hayseed agents they have. I'm really going to get you paid. Let me show you how this really works. Like, they may have had some sugar-free cookies and bonded over diabetes, one afternoon. It's all about money. I'm not buying any of that crap for a second. It's about money, and nobody with no experience gets a gig like this unless they told the guy, oh, I got a plan. I'm going to really get you paid. And that was never a possibility. I wonder how I'll make the prediction that unless he told him, the agent told Orlando Brown, listen, no chance you're getting a deal this year. This year we asked for more than Trent Williams. They won't give it to you. You play for the 16.7, play great, and then next year when we've got only 1 year away from getting to actual free agency, same spot Tyreek Hill was in, we've got leverage, and that's where I can get you paid. I'm assuming that's what he said. If he told him he could get him Trent Williams money this year, Orlando Brown has got to be one pissed puppy right now.
Yeah, not only that, but he's also just flat wrong, right? The AFC West now has lost Von Miller, but has Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa. It has Randy Gregory, Bradley Chubb, Chandler Jones, and Max Crosby. Max Crosby led the NFL last year in pressures from a defensive line position. He should have gotten his now, right? And because
he's not a great tackle. He's an okay tackle. And I think the Chiefs were, you know, okay with having an okay tackle making great money. That's what Eric Fisher was. They can certainly incorporate that into their cap. I think they dodged a bullet here, you know. And if Orlando Brown was saying, okay, well, I'm going to bet on myself another year, I got some, you know, I got some property to sell Orlando Brown if that's the case.
Yeah, no doubt. How good is the pass rush that they're going to see, right? Khalil Mack was, we were like, oh my God, they got Khalil Mack. Because we think of vintage Khalil Mack. Chicago obviously didn't think there was a vintage player that they could build around anymore. They wouldn't have moved him. How rough is this pass rush in the AFC West actually? When you drill down to the mathematics of it, how good were these players last year? How good do you expect them to be this year?
Yeah, I mean, Chandler Jones is always not as good as his sack numbers, which is why his PFF grade oscillates so much, because it's basically – he's very Jared Allen-like, if Chiefs fans remember Jared Allen from his time with KC in Minnesota, where his pressure numbers are not that great, but his sack numbers are amazing. That's how Chandler Jones is. So if you last year was a great year for Jones, started with 5 sacks in week one. I don't think he's a premier pass rusher anymore, but he's a good pass rusher. And you put that with Max Crosby, that's a formidable group. I agree with you. I think Mack is a little bit beyond his prime, but Joey Bosa is very much a great pass rusher, right? And they can mix and match that. And then in Denver, I think Gregory, former Nebraska Cornhusker, is sort of on the rise there. So I think it's tough. You also get Von Miller. You know, you also get the Tampa Bay group coming up here with Shaq Barrett and Joe Tryon Chwuinenka, first-round pick last year. So it's a tough schedule. We make the Chiefs' schedule 1 point harder than the average team on a neutral field per game, and that's very much sort of where it goes as far as the pass rush as well.
1 point. Like, literally 1 point?
Yeah, that's a lot, though, right? I mean, that, you know,
we'll explain that, why I shouldn't look at that as, okay, if we started a game with the other team leading 1-0, I'm not really sweating it as a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, I don't think you should. I think that's, you know, the hardest schedule in the league is the Chiefs. It's 1 point harder than the average team on a neutral. The easiest schedule is the Giants, which is a little over 1 point easier than the average team on a neutral field. You know, a win in a season is worth about 30 to 40 points. So you take that 2 point discrepancy, and that means the Giants' schedule is worth a win per year easier than the Chiefs, right? So, you know, when people say strength of schedule, I bristle a little bit just because, you know, I think that, you know, it's overrated, right? Patrick Mahomes is worth 7 points a game over Chad Henne. So that tells you the magnitude of things, but it is something, right?
It is something. I agree with that. What chance would you give it, both analytics, data, but eye test, knowledge of people around the league, that Orlando Brown busted his ass this offseason, comes into camp at whatever time he really needs to. I don't know that everybody needs 6 weeks of camp, but gets in time, and then has a Trent Williams-like season for the Chiefs. What percentage chance would you give that?
I would offer somebody 15-1.
Yeah, I would give them 5,000-1. He's not Trent Williams, so it's not going to happen.
But even the preamble to that, which is, you know, bust his ass, that kind of thing. Like, I don't see it, man. Like, this negotiation, from what I can tell and from the people I've talked to, this negotiation was a joke, man. Like, I don't see somebody with that kind of professionalism or lack thereof. You know, when you talk about somebody who came to the combine so ill-prepared that he had the worst combine score of tackles in the entire Pro Football Focus database, you know, I have a hard time seeing him be prepared. Chiefs fans, like, I don't think, even if he comes to the end of training camp, I could see a situation where if he does not play all of training camp with the Chiefs, he is not starting week one for this team.
The word I'm hearing is that, you know, if you're like, oh, he's going to hold out, he's going to demand a trade, which I don't think people feel that's going to happen. But if he would, like, the trade value did not go up with how he played this past year, right? And the Ravens clearly couldn't get a straight first-round pick last year. So we're talking about, if he's like, well, you got to trade me. Why would anybody, to me, he gets like a fourth or fifth rounder, maybe. And so the Chiefs would never trade him for that, you know, because why would you give up a first-round pick to now have to give an enormous contract to a guy? He's clearly not going to sign, right, unless you give him, you know, way more than whatever the Chiefs were offering. And you got to give up the draft pick. You know, I don't see any market whatsoever to think that he could get traded.
Well, and the Chiefs were the one team willing to play him at left tackle, where he really wants to play, and he valued that. And if you look at the actual offer that he got, it was basically top of right tackle market, right? So that's kind of where I think the league views him. And if you're the Chiefs, I think of one scenario where a trade makes sense. I think one scenario. I think if another team's tackle gets injured during training camp and it's a contender who's desperate and they're willing to give, you know, better than the compensatory pick that they would get for letting Orlando Brown go, which let's say third or fourth round pick, then I think you make the trade, especially, and this is the last piece, if you need that salary cap space to acquire somebody like Brian Burns of Carolina or Josh Allen of Jacksonville, or even somebody like this guy was in the news last week, Robert Quinn of the Chicago Bears, to help your pass rush.
Do you, when you look at Orlando Brown and you know, his agent and their big plan, do you think that they just botched it, that the agent didn't realize that they've got 2 years control on him, that, you know, that this was just a complete, you know, mistake on their part?
I don't, actually, because I think when you I think it's part incompetence, but the league is also littered with examples of where this works, right? I mean, and the Chiefs are, you know, the Chiefs at least went to, you know, the franchise tag year on Eric Berry and Justin Houston, but eventually those deals got done, right? And eventually the Chris Jones deal got done. I mean, the Tyreek Hill thing, if you view that as an aberration, a year where the market for wide receivers was exploding, then, you know, extending Orlando Brown, maybe not at the number that they were quite asking for, but something a little bit below, is very consistent with how the Chiefs have operated. Now, I think not extending him is consistent with what we believe this offseason has represented moving forward. So I think it's depending upon how you view the Chiefs and whether you viewed this offseason as a blip on the radar or you viewed it as a harbinger of things to come for this team.
Yeah. And so how does it play out from here now in your mind?
I think he sits out most of training camp. I think he comes in late. I think he's out of shape. And I think Joe Tooney starts at left tackle against Arizona in week one. Is he ready for week two against the Chargers? That's only 3 days later, maybe. But I certainly think that Orlando Brown, I think this is a bad play for him. And I think if he wants to salvage, you know, his career and his, you know, money-making ability, he shows up to camp day one.
Yeah, but I give that no chance. None. No way. I mean, I think that's at the essence is part of this is just this gives him the chance to miss camp. And I think that's appealing to a guy who couldn't bother to work out for the combine.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think ultimately, you know, the Chiefs were expecting a more mature player when they traded for him. You know, he, like I said, he wasn't terrible last year. This wasn't great, right? And
right.
At left tackle, you want to pay great guys. And if a guy's not great, and like think about it, again, we talk about Eric Fisher, not a great talent, right? Ultimately, but what from all indications, a great, you know, intangible player, right? Orlando Brown's not a great player, and it doesn't seem like he's a great intangible player. So even to think about giving him an Eric Fisher contract seems silly at this point.
Yeah, you know, I don't see a plan B to you. I mean, they're going to go with what they got, right?
They could sign it. So a couple guys, Ty Inseki is a career backup but has had moments in the league. You know, he could pinch there. You know, Fisher is available. I know Dwayne Brown's available, but he just got in trouble, and he would also be expensive, so it's probably not going to be that. But there are options there if they try them. But I agree. I think they go into camp with what they have. You know, Riley Reiff's another one. I think they go into camp with what they have. They stare down Orlando Brown. And you know, that ends up being how it works.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, what they have is what they'll play with. And I think Orlando Brown will come in. I don't think he tries to sit out the year because no one's ever sat out the year and increased their value, have they? At least in recent times.
I mean, Le'Veon Bell just said this week that he really wishes he would have played for the Steelers in 2018. And I think And I think, you know, that was one. And Le'Veon Bell played a weaker position, but he was a much better running back than Orlando Brown as a tackle.
We know the cap, other than pandemic times, goes up, right? We expect it to go up. I know the last year or two it hasn't gone up the way people thought it would. Are we going to see some giant spike in the cap, and that could be this play? Let's delay it 1 year, even 2 years, and then there'll be a mega deal that we don't want to miss out on, you know, by having you tied up in some deal for 5 years. So even if it looks like on paper it's only a three-year deal, the fourth and fifth year could become cheap if the salary cap is going to explode. Do you see any kind of cap explosion coming?
I don't. Explosion, no. And I also think from the Chiefs' perspective, you want to be in a position where the cap exploding doesn't provide you relief. You want the situation where the cap exploding provides you with resources. You know what I'm saying? And Orlando Brown, big deal. Is, you know, the cap exploding gives you relief. And that's fine, and that's okay. But Orlando Brown is, again, the cap giving you resources means you can go out and get an Orlando Brown-like tackle for, you know, okay money. And at least you have the freedom to do that, as opposed to praying that the cap goes up so that somebody you're already committed to is cheaper than they were before. Like, I think the Chiefs are going to operate from the position of strength, which is the former, rather than a position of weakness where we see so many of these over-levered teams, which is the latter.
Do you think Patrick Mahomes was in on all this discussion? He was kept up to speed. You know, a big part of the start to the offseason was Orlando Brown supporting Patrick Mahomes at his wedding. I don't know if you remember that. We got that news from his consigliere, Jamal Brown, who seems to keep talking for him nowadays, because I've seen him quoted even in recent days. But do you think Patrick Mahomes was made aware of how this was going by the organization?
Yeah, and I think Mahomes is an adult about all of these. I mean, Tyreek Hill was his best receiver, was the recipient of probably the most important pass in the history of the franchise, and they let him go, right? I mean, I think Patrick Mahomes is singularly focused here. And Orlando Brown, I mean, we all have that friend where we want to support them, but they start doing some crazy. They chase after the crazy girl, and we have to let them make a mistake.
was that something recent? Was that a recent experience in your life?
No, not really. I mean, we'll all have fun at that wedding, but it doesn't mean we will bet on it long term.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking to Eric Eager here in the program, data scientist from Pro Football Focus. One about the NFL in general, and that is the news that the Texans have settled all lawsuits dealing with the Deshaun Watson case. What does that say to you?
It's going to be really hard to root for the Browns or the Texans if you're one of those fan bases for a while, right? I mean, I think that you got to kind of let this thing play out from that standpoint. It's very clear that Watson and the Houston Texans were involved in some things that were not above board, right? And so, I don't know. I don't pretend to be a legal expert here. I do think it stinks, though.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I would tend to agree as well. All right, let's get to our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, an official healthcare provider of Kansas Athletics, together with LMH Health. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this one. Orlando Brown is or is not in Kansas City for the 24 season?
24? No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not, he says. Tyreek Hill's stats, catches, yards, touchdowns will be what this year?
Yeah, so here's the thing. On DraftKings, is over-under 1,050 yards. So that shows what the market thinks of him. I think it's going to be like 83 catches for 1,100 yards and like four touchdowns. I think it's going to be very disappointing.
1,104?
Yep.
By the way, you did say 1,050. Is that a new math term, by the way?
No, but like 1,050 and a half, you know, 1,050 and a half, they all sound weird. And I'm a math guy.
Can you do your times tables up to what number?
Pretty high. Like, I would say like 30 or so. I don't know.
30 or so?
I can do it pretty well in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's test it. 27 times 29.
27 times 29, so 58. And then
you don't have it figured out then. You're doing long form math.
Yeah. Well, okay. I do long form up to those numbers, Seren. Jeez.
783. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Just wanted to see. I didn't know. I build you as a guy who can handle his times tables in his head all the way to 12. At least 12.
But I can do long division in my head pretty fast. Not while I'm shopping for pants for my sister's wedding, but yeah.
Is that going on right now?
Seren, as watchers of the Red, Gold, and Bold podcast might be able to find out, I've lost a little weight, so I need to buy new pants for this wedding. And it's not as easy. I mean, a mathematician walking through a store, that's a mark.
Yeah, no doubt. This should be exciting. I can't wait to see the bright orange tux you're going to be wearing at this suit, the top hat, the cane. It's bold, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. Tell me, who will be the better quarterback here moving forward, Baker Mayfield or Marcus Mariota?
I know where you're leading. I know you're a Mariota guy. The Panthers, as dysfunctional as they are, and I know Jeff doesn't believe this with us, Chidea, I think it's going to be Mayfield. Mayfield's a little bit better, and I think the Falcons are even more dysfunctional than the Panthers.
Oh, wow. Okay. We'll find out. We'll let you get back to shopping. Don't get the pants too tight in the crotch. You know, be careful. It can be uncomfortable during the wedding.
I'm nothing if not careful, Petro.
That is a fact. You're the man. Have a great weekend, buddy.
You're the best, Seren. Take care.
All right, Eric Eager, VP of Research and Development for the Pro Football Focus, of course, co-host with me on the Red, Gold, and Bold, the 2D podcast, along with our buddy Jeff Chidea, and the guy who has been saying all along, it ain't going to happen with a long-term deal with Orlando Brown, and it is official as of 3 o'clock today. We will take a break. 913-3810-810. You're in the program.
End of the hour, easy enough for me to say, answer, when did Tom Watson win his last British Open? We found out he won his first in 75. When did he win his last?
Hmm. 88, somewhere in that range?
More, it was further back than that.
Really? So he won six that fast?
1983.
Well, he just rattled them all. 75 to 83, won six times?
That would appear to be the case, yes.
Oh, is that right?
75, 77, 80, 82, 83. Three in a row. He won the Open Championship.
I knew he was amazing.
And how about this? He won all eight of his majors in between 75 and 83.
So, by the way, he won five. I thought Danny said he won six British Opens. He won five.
According to this, he won 5, 75, 77, 80, 82, and 83.
Okay. Got it. Wow, between 75 and 83, he won 5 times. That is amazing.
And he won 8 total majors.
In that span.
Well, it started with the Open Championship in 75.
Right.
And it all ended with an Open Championship in 83, and everything he had was in between. And it looks like, as Danny pointed out, the one that eluded him was the PGA Championship. He finished second there in 78.
Well, and that's kind of what we were talking about, is like, you know, guys have this window. And for Tom Watson, it lasted 8-9 years, right? 75 to 83, when you count 75 as one of the years, that's 9 years that he won all those majors. But nowadays, it's like Koepka wins 4 in like 3 years, and then he never wins again.
Yeah, I really, truly wonder. I mean, like I said, Danny knows quite a bit more about golf than I do, but I think everybody is susceptible. Not everybody. Most people are susceptible. I mean, it's why Tom Brady's the only one of the Patriots with six. I think everybody is susceptible to that. Man, this is great, and as you pointed out, you're more in demand. You got, all right, now I'm doing Gatorade, now I'm doing Nike, now I'm doing this, now I'm doing that. Maybe you're just as motivated, but you don't have as much time.
Yeah, I in managing that time and being able to do it, and, you know, you manage a family. You start getting old and you start having, you get married, you have kids, you got to manage all those things. It's really, really hard. And I do think, you know, I believe in the all boats rise with the tide, so that the depth of competitive players in the field of golf is even better now. So there is more competition that's out there. But you know, I do believe heavily it's a lot of like, okay, I'm in golf. I love golf. It's great. I can still play, but I'm here to get paid. And getting paid is doing all the endorsement stuff. And that takes you off the course, takes you off the practice range. My theory, I'm sticking to it. We'll see if it, you know, anybody comes and tears it down, but not so much. Tom
if I
Watson.
Start making that kind of money, you'll see me here a lot less.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And we appreciate that. We appreciate the honesty of your lack of commitment. Great Cajun food from Jazz. We're giving away there. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. You can find them online at jazzkitchen.com. Independence, I-70 and 291. At the Legends in KCK, and of course the original 39th and State Line by the University of Kansas Health System. Get you some great Cajun food tonight and the best live music around. It's at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. We will take a break. When we come back, get you the things you need to know. Still to come, David Leske talking Royals baseball next.
All right, on which course was the very first British Open played? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City.